everyone. I'm Ashley Easter, and welcome to the Courage Conversation Show. I am so glad that you're here today. We talk about empowering stories for survivors and advocates, and I'm really glad that you decided to join the show tonight. We have an amazing guest who I'm going to introduce you in just a second. But I wanted to let you know I'm the founder and executive director of Courage 365. We have resources for survivors on our website and so many different free tools that we want to offer to you. And one of our offerings is having these conversations with people who have either survived amazing things or helped other people get out and survive amazing things. And that's the case in this conversation. We are actually going to be talking to Tawny Browning, who is an escape artist. She helps other people escape and step into a more healing role in their lives. And so I am just going to read her bio really quick before we bring her onto the show. Tawny Browning considers herself first and foremost to be a mother of five. Beyond that, she was the supervising and casting producer for A&E's Escaping Polygamy, a series on TV documenting the trials and struggles of individuals attempting to leave the cult life of polygamy. And that's actually how I met Tawny, was through this show and having colleagues that are connected. We've worked on a few little things behind the scenes together on other projects. And so that's how we got to know each other. And she's the real deal. She's amazing. And really, if you haven't seen that show on A&E, I know that there's replays available for you to check that out. But it's really an incredible show of escape. So I'm going to continue. Though she insists she only wanted to be a country singer for years, Tawny has been assisting her husband, Matt Browning, in investigations of numerous skinhead organizations. With her covert investigative tactics, Tawny was instrumental in the shutting down of one of the world's largest and most violent skinhead organizations. A truth which is detailed in Tawny and Matt's new book dropping July 4th. Guys, you're going to want to get a copy of that book. Tawny continues to gather intelligence on various individuals and religious extremists throughout the world and is employed in new ventures currently in production as well as development. Wow, so many cool things. This is a person you are going to be so excited to meet. So without further ado, let's welcome Tawny onto the show. Hey, Tawny, welcome to Courage Conversations.
Thank you for that intro. Thank you. Glad to be here. You're the real deal.
We can be the real deal together. Woo. So I had worked with you behind the scenes on some different projects through some mutual colleagues and got to know you through there. And I'd heard like little snippets about the skinhead group and your husband's involvement in that. I didn't realize the extent that you were involved as well. So I'm super excited about this interview because I'm like, I'm going to learn new things about you too. It's just going to be so fun. Is there anything that I left out in your bio that you want to share about yourself, or did that pretty well cover it?
I think you covered it really well. I appreciate the intro, and there's nobody does anything like that alone.
Yes.
Community, which is what I love that you're doing.
Awesome. Yeah, it definitely takes a village, and I'm so glad to be a part of that same village together. So yeah, your bio is incredible, and it's been an honor to be able to see some of the ways that you're working. But I'm wondering, can you share, how do you get into the world of shutting down skinhead groups and helping people escape cults, like polygamous cults, and like, how do you fall into a role like that? How does that practically work?
If Matt was here, if my husband was here, I'd just like send it to him. But since he isn't, I think it's his fault. I just really did want to grow up and making people feel good, feel happy. Hence the country singer montage at the beginning. And what it came down to is that Matt was so involved in what and passionate about what he was doing, that it was taking him away from what is most important to me, which was my family. So I started saying, hey, if I can get this information, do you think we could go out to dinner?
Ooh.
It was more of a selfish reason, but he also wasn't getting the support because really people didn't realize at the time, what a great big deal and how important the work was that he was doing that he knew was important. And I think as a family, we live by the mantra, if you know something, you need to do it. If you know something different, you better do something with that information. And it was fun and I was good at it. And I got information that he wasn't getting. And then he could vet it and make sure it was true. Because a female touch sometimes, that's okay to say, I hope, still can get information than a male can. And he was getting different information I couldn't get. And together, we made that work.
Wow, that's really cool. And it almost makes me wish that we had invited Matt to come on too, because I feel like that would have been such a fun interview. We'll have to talk about that for the future. But you two are a power couple, and I really love that. So I guess one of the things that I'm wondering is, like, skinhead groups, violent supremacist groups, and then polygamous groups. I would put both of those in the cult category. Do you agree with that?
You know what? I'm not sure that I would have to start with, but when you start getting into this stuff, you find out that the racism runs super deep. You find out that the supremacist feelings of both cults run really deep. And yes, so I 100%, you were ahead of the game than I was. I didn't realize how similar these were together and how similar the two groups, how I understood so much more because of the work I had done with Matt when I got into the polygamous groups.
Got it. I'm wondering if you could share, like, maybe some of the similarities that you saw, like broad brush, like themes. And just for our listeners, I know we have some who tune in who are in polyamorous relationships, which I just want to make a statement that's very different than a polygamous relationship. Just for educational purposes, polyamory is equality based, or it's supposed to be equality based. And it's one of those things where it's not just the man having all these wives, it can be a mix. And so when we're talking about polygamy, I just want to make that disclaimer that, like, we're talking about something different than polyamory, just for our audience to know. But back to the question, as you're looking at these two groups, and some people would from the outside be like, how could helping women escape a polygamous cult have any similar themes to taking down, like, a racially violent skinhead group?
Sometimes the mind control can be the same. So no one's born hating. No one's born with some of these tendencies, these feelings inside. I'm not sure quite what word to use, but no one's born with that. And they're similar in the fact that these folks, these are good people at the core, I think, but I believe most people are really good. And just the mind control is crazy. It really is. And that is very similar in both groups. Once you get in and you start breathing, eating, living these kind of different philosophies, that's where we get in trouble. And that's when I wonder that when we switch from being good people to something that may be a little bit more nefarious or dark. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, I think you did answer the question. And what I've seen in cults a lot of times in my experience is that the people who join or are born into groups like this, there's often a very different motivation and reason that they're there than the people at the top who started the groups. There seems like often a differentiation between kind of the power structure and then the people that are swept into the power structure. They may do bad things in the name of the cult, but in my experience, a lot of times the quote unquote underlings, they're, like you said, experiencing that mind control. And it's a lot of times the people at the top that really have the dark intentions to begin with.
Exactly. And I've got to tell you, my husband's been very big on helping a lot of the racially motivated people, the guys that are in this group as well, to leave it behind. And sometimes it's knowing that there's something different out there. A lot of times it's like, I found myself in these situations. How do I get out? Can I get out? And to give them that little bit of hope, a little bit of courage, can make all the difference.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's
really big on individuals can do. I was a mom. I love being a mom. My husband happened to be in a profession that I never see ourselves in. As individuals, when we know, when we see, and we do, we can also that we're shutting down a skinhead stations, or you're in the middle of Colorado City helping women leave. I don't know, when you see and then you do, just normal people, normal you, me, all of us can do pretty remarkable, miraculous things. Not me, all of us.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
I really, really sincerely believe that.
Yeah. I think sometimes that is the thing where we see other people doing amazing things like you and your husband are doing. But I know that though you two have incredible talent, you also are normal people, and that there's a lot of people with also incredible talent. And if we put our mind to something and we want to help people, oftentimes there's an outlet to do that. And I do wish that there were less people who are bystanders and more people who would say, hey, this is a toxic group over here. How can I help people break free of this? Not only for the people in the cults, but also for the people that they're affecting outside with their behaviors as well. So a question, what does it feel like to help women escape or to be investigating these groups? And does that, when you are in this mode of researching a violent skinhead group, or when you're in the mode of listening to the stories of women and children and the abuse they've experienced in these patriarchal polygamist groups, do you ever ask yourself or have like thoughts about seeing the world as more evil? Or how do you find the good in the world when you're really seeing some of the darkest, most evil things?
It hasn't been till like the last year or two that some of these different groups has crossed. That was like these people, and that this was our family or my life. When they cross, it gets a little weird. But for the most part, I was able to keep compartmentalize both of those. That this is good. This is my family. This is my friends. This is my community. And over here is just something that I want these people over here to experience what I've experienced. But they didn't really cross. Once they started to cross, or people would come to the, we had people in the home, or, you know, so-and-so, and it started to cross. That I'm still learning exactly how to manage that, but I know, like I said, I know people are good. I know that there's good in this world. I meet it every day, and people like you and others. And I just have to keep remembering that. And then when it gets too much, to step away.
I think that's an important thing, too, for advocates to remember, that when we're in the midst of a lot of darkness, sometimes we do need to step back and get a little bit of perspective just to get a refresh of, okay, there is still goodness in the world. And that's why we're fighting against evil things in the world, so we can bring things to light and spread more safety, more goodness, more equality in the world. So that's really cool.
Ash, I have to tell you that the people that I am so blessed to work with are so amazing that you can't walk away without knowing how much goodness is in the world. You're like, you've been through all of these things, and yet you inspire me. You give me hope. And so it's hard to not have that brush off on you as well, especially when they're doing it, when they have the courage to do what is mind-blowing sometimes when you just lay it all out.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I want to talk a little bit about the women escaping the polygamous groups. And could you just give us a 30-second overview of what kind of groups are they leaving? Because it seems like it's more than just simply this man has multiple wives. It seems like there's a whole system involved in that group. And can you help our listeners who maybe aren't super familiar with those groups get an overview of what that looks like, what the belief systems are?
That's a loaded question. There are several different polygamous groups, and there are some that are just independent. But I'm going to go ahead and talk about two main groups, the FLDS and the Kingston group. Both of those have a man at the top. Some call him a prophet. Some call him a leader. Some call him a man on the watchtower. From that stems all control. So it basically kids answer to their mothers, their mothers answer to their fathers answer to a leader. That leader answers to the man on top. Therefore, that's where if you've got someone evil on top, we're in trouble. we're in trouble. And a lot of these groups, the abuse is beyond anything you can really imagine. And you imagine, and I've seen it, and then all of a sudden something else happens and you're like, I thought I saw it all. So it's just extreme abuse, especially like in the Kingston group. I think it's okay to say I have not talked to one woman who has not been sexually abused. Not one. I spoke to one woman who said that she hadn't, and then she told me about one of her uncles watching her shower. And I was like, that's sexual abuse, my love. That's sexual abuse. So it's sometimes not even knowing how to define what they're going through. And that is not rare. I wish I could say that was rare, but it isn't. And so that is the difference between a man choosing polyamorous relationships or a woman and this type relation, these type groups and communities.
That makes sense. I think that really gives a clear overview. And then again, for the skinhead group in particular, what is that community like? What are some of the values that they hold or some of the actions that they're trying to take, maybe the structure of those?
Like the polygamous groups, these are misogynist groups where the woman needs to find her place in there if they're going to survive these groups. Because I didn't really live in those groups, it was okay for me to play it for a minute, but you could see how quickly a woman could be beat down in the skinhead types groups. And I think I've been able to understand that a little bit and understand how the women that I work with in polygamous groups, how a little teensy bit of how they might feel. I go home though. I don't live in it. I don't sleep in it. I go home to my own bed, my dogs, my children, my life. They live it in and out every day.
Wow. Wow. So on top of the racial violence, there's also sexism, misogyny. Do you also see that as a crossover at all in the polygamous groups? Is there, I know we talked about like the sexism and patriarchal ideals, but is there also like a element of like racial violence and racist ideology within the polygamous groups?
100%. We just had the Kingston group and it was all adjudicated. I think I need to put out there that it was found. We just had some problems in the Kingston group where they were bashing a young gay man because he was with his boyfriend just this year. So definitely that happens. And I have other people in the Kingston group who have told me that they were told that gay and lesbian people were, and blacks, anybody of color, were the worst on the earth. So they've been taught and even encouraged, according to people who have been in the group, to for that kind of violence, that it was not looked down upon, in fact, encouraged.
Wow. Wow. It's really scary to see how these groups that on the surface people would be like, oh, these are completely separate, but how they have so many of the same ideals. And I've actually seen those threads through most cults that I have studied. There might be a few exceptions, but most cults seem to, when there's this ideal of controlling people, they then buy into or create systems of control and sorting people based on their, quote, worthiness or value or not having value in the communities. What does it take to leave a group like this? What is usually the thing that you see, whether it's in the polygamous groups or the skinhead groups? What's often the thing that causes somebody to be like, you know what? There might be something more outside of here. Something feels wrong. What is often that tipping point for someone to leave?
I will start with polygamous groups. It's the courage to question. I teach my children, question everything. I always have. And then I get into these communities and I'm so glad that I did. The courage to question. And a lot of times the opportunities that they think, wow, I can leave, or wow, I can make these decisions. And it's just still so mind-blowing to me and wild when I hear a woman, a guy say something like that, oh, I can leave. I'm like, of course, it's more of a psychological block there. So it just, I would say the first thing is the courage to question. And I think that can be for all of us and your audience as well. Question. It's okay. God, is it okay to say God?
Yeah.
God,
yeah.
Brain, we're supposed to use it. That's what that makes separate us from the other animals that he created, that we can think and use your brain, question everything. If it feels wrong in here, it probably is.
Yeah. Really trusting your intuition and kind of, because that's what got me out of a cult too. It was the question piece. It was years of putting down questions or only allowing those questions to be answered within certain perimeters or parameters of the materials that they gave, but to be able to seek answers outside and really start to be like, something feels off here. Certain things aren't matching up. I have this ideology, but this doesn't match many people's lived experiences. That makes sense. And so is that the same with the skinhead groups? Is it a lot of questioning as well?
With them, and this is with the same with polygamous group, it's getting sick and tired of what's going on and being that kind of control and being tired of it. That helps us get, they get out as well. And again, it's just knowing that they can. Like one guy I worked with, just showing him, you can go to school. This is how we can do it. Let me show you how we can do this. And he's now making six, he makes great money. I don't want to say too much, but it was just knowing and pushing, you can do this, you can do this, for about 6 weeks, because it was just that doubt was just too high before he could really figure out, I really can do this. And then he took off. He didn't need any more help. He just needed someone to say, hey, you can. And I think that's something, again, that all of us can get when we see someone in need. We can say, hey, you can, this is how. Anything that we're uniquely capable to help with, we should and we can. And that does make the world better, because he was one of the most violent skinheads I have ever known.
Wow.
Matt has worked with, and he's not. Like what? I said, he's making six figures. I will still say he's racial. No one just completely gets out of this kind of thing, but step by step. Yes.
And
he's
that
not community. He's not committing hate crimes anymore.
He said,
I'll take that as a win right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That is an interesting thing, too, that we have to understand about people who are leading cults. I think that so many times we hope that they will just jump into, I don't know, our idea of what perfect ideology is, a perfect living. And it often is like a step-by-step journey. I know that some of the things I believed after I left the cult-like environment I was in, I look back now and I'm like, oh my God, that was toxic too. It was a step forward, but it was still toxic. And are there communities that can help people after they've left and maybe leaving like the heat of the cult? Are there communities that exist to help people kind of deconstruct from the ideology and be exposed to better, more healthy ideas and reprogramming their brain from the brainwashing?
I'm so glad that you said one thing that I learned. I was just so naive on so much of this. And so when these girls or women would get out and make what I consider not life, my husband, Matt, said, according to who gets to decide what's healthy and good for them? And that was really helpful. Because what everyone is all a journey by themselves. We're all on this journey. We're trying to figure out how to make it work. And they are too. And they start, they're out. It's a step forward. Maybe they'll one day open up, they'll look and say, hey, this is toxic, or maybe it's okay for them. So I'm really glad that my job was to support. Mm-hmm. My job was to say, hey, here's some choices, here's some ideas, but it was to support their journey. So I'm glad that you said that. As far as groups, there's a great group right now that does Hope After Polygamy. Oh my gosh, it's polygamous women that were all involved in that, now helping women get out. Individuals, there's so many individuals that have been in these polygamous groups that now help women, like Rachel Jeff. She wouldn't even want me to do this, but that's Warren Jeff's daughter. Everyone calls her and somehow she'll find them resources where it needs to be. And she doesn't have a group. She's just her. Now, for us on the outside, our job is to make sure that the thing I hear over and over is, I just want to be normal. Our job is to show them that there is no real normal, but look, we'll support you. This is how it's done out here. Now you decide. Because I really feel like they're refugees, foreigners in our world, and it's our job to show them the ropes.
And I really appreciate that part about giving them options and choice. Because I think what can happen so quickly, and I've seen this happen with so many people, honestly, they leave one toxic group and then they join another one because they're looking for somebody outside of them to tell them exactly what to do. And sure, there's certain things that need to be handled a specific way. If there's child abuse happening, we need to contact the police. But a lot of life choices, people do need to learn from their own mistakes. They do need to have autonomy in their decisions, because that actually strengthens their critical thinking and their ability to really thrive in the outside world versus relying on somebody, even a good somebody, to tell them exactly what to do. Because that, again, can mimic the power and control dynamics in a cult and not actually bring them to a place of stability and personal reliance and inner strength.
I love that you said that too, because what looks like a mistake to me may be their absolute lifeline. So this is their journey, and I'm there. I want to be there to help them through that if they need me. But I, like you said, I'm just a support. They have to do this.
Yeah, yeah. And I also love that what I've seen of you and what I see with other advocates is that different advocates help people at different stages of their journey. So you're very much at the beginning of a lot of people's journey of the escape portion. And then, like you said, Rachel Jeffs being able to help in some of the later portions. And his name is not crossing my mind right now, but there's an African-American gentleman that I actually went to see him in person. I'm going to have to put his name in the show notes. But he is very good at having conversations with people who were former white supremacists or are white supremacists, and helping them kind of process through that to a place of equality and acceptance and appreciation of people who may not be exactly the same as them. And so I do love that there's different people who are passionate about helping people at different stages in their journey. And your stage that you help people at is so valuable, that escape portion. I really just have kind of one other big question, and it's more just for loved ones who see somebody they care about, maybe it's a friend or a family member who is in a high control group. Maybe it's a skinhead group. Maybe it's QAnon. Maybe it is a polygamous group. Maybe it's something else entirely, but their loved ones in a high control group and they're just sitting there, what can I do? It feels every time I give them more information about why this is bad, they like push against it. What would you say is a word of encouragement and maybe even some advice for people who are like, I want to help my loved one, but I don't know what to do?
My husband and I just wrote a book. It's by, as you mentioned, it's coming out in July. And there's a whole section that was so important to us that we talk about this very thing. What do you do? First of all, once you see somebody starting down these kind of roads, you hand them a little lacrosse stick. You hand them a paintbrush. You show them, look, there's better outlets for some of this. Once, if you have a loved one in, my family hates this sometimes, but it's really true. Loved ones, and you love, and then you love some more, and you keep on loving even when it's really scary, because you've got to keep those channels of communication open. And you show them there's a better way when they're ready to listen, because they will listen and they will turn to you. And like I just talked about Rachel Jeffs, I don't know why she's on my mind, but she is so hated in the FLES community, so hated. But when people need help, when they want out, they call her, because at the end of the day, love wins and they know that she is love.
Wow. Sometimes your infamy in certain groups is actually the thing that lets people in the groups wanting to get out know that you're a safe and loving person.
Yeah. And I know that's simplistic. I know that it's not that easy. But when it's all washed away and all the pain and all of the hurt is washed away, it really does come down to that kind of support and love and them knowing that you're constant, not okay with it, not condoning, not helping with it. It's speaking out against it, but I am here for you. I love you. You are enough. You matter. And that, I think that's what really at the end of the day for all of us wins.
Wow. That's powerful. And when I just think about why people tend to join these high control groups outside of people being born into them, which I know happens a lot in the polygamous groups, I think we're always just searching for love, connection, acceptance, a group to be a part of. And so people, in my experience and in my research, who step into cults tend to do so because they don't feel that somewhere in their life. And they're looking for something to fill that connection void. And if you can continue to be a kind, loving person and show them that there are other ways to get love and connection and acceptance and community outside of this toxic group, that really can be a lifeline for a lot of people. So thank you for saying that. The last question we always ask people, and this is just a fun one, what does courage mean to you?
Courage is, that's a good question. Courage means doing what you are not, is not necessarily easy for you to do, but you know is right. And that, sometimes you got to walk alone in all of that to be authentic and to have the courage to do you, be you, and help others be themselves. I don't know. I think that's my biggest thing is, how do we be us? How can we be authentic and have that identity, courage to be us, to be you? Because I don't think most people are haters. I don't think most people want to be controlled. So how do we have the courage to just break out of that and be you? That sounds ridiculous. I don't really know that answered your question, but
it does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Courage,
I mean,
ability just yourself. To be vulnerable and be you, be authentic. And that's easy. It really isn't easy.
You're absolutely right. It's not easy to be ourselves, especially in a world that always wants us to conform. And so I really do think that is courage. And I love that you shared that. So you've got a book coming out. And I hear that you have a website that should be up by the time this airs. Tell me about your website and where people can get your book when it's released, if you're doing like pre-orders, all that stuff.
The book's available wherever they book right now, but it's dropping on July 4th. We have a website called mattandtawny.com, pretty simple. And we wrote the book so that not only to show the importance of the work and we're doing, and to, in this divisive world that we're all, just our journey through that. And then, like I said, at the very end, we talk about ways to help our loved ones if we find them in it. And that's the most important chapter to me. And we also go into PTSD and what it takes to do some of this work. And at the end of the day, someone asked me, why did you write it? And I said, I have, in one sentence or less, they asked me, and it's, so that no one feels alone. I just don't want anybody to feel like they're alone. And that's why I'm terrified. I'm actually terrified, Ashley, for it to come out. But I'm very excited to share where we've been and what we've learned.
Wow. That is so powerful. And I don't know, I've heard that when you're a little bit scared to have something come out, but you also know in your heart that you should, that's an indicator of the amount of impact that it's going to make. And I really am excited for that impact. And I know people are going to really be like, wow, this speaks to me. So thank you for doing that. We'll be sure to have links to the show notes below. Tawny, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a great experience. I know our audience learned a lot. I know I learned things as well. Really appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Ashley. And thank you for the work that you do.
Absolutely. And everybody, you can follow Courage 365 on all of our different social media accounts. We've got Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, all the places that you can follow us and see what we're doing, because we put out these episodes frequently. We have a lot of resources that you can use. Our website, courage365.org, has a whole resource page that you could click on. When you go to the website, you'll see the Need Help tab, and it's all there. So many other tools and things that you can access. And then in addition to that, the resource I want to highlight, really I'm doing this whole Courage Conversation season, is my favorite resource, which is our daily inspirational text messages. These are free. All you have to do to sign up is text the word courage to the number on the screen, which is 917-809-7311. That's 917-809-7311. Just type the word courage and hit send. You'll be added to our text message list. And when you do that, Monday through Friday, we'll send you inspirational text messages written by survivors for survivors. It's really been one of the resources that we've gotten the most positive feedback in. You don't have your number shared with other survivors. It only goes to us. And if you respond, somebody's on the other end of the line to send you a message back. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. You can follow us on social media, as I said. You can go to our website, courage365.org, sign up for this text message list, or even join our free Facebook group. You can find that pretty easily on Facebook. Sending you all so much love, and as always, live with courage.